Often when we talk about the Passover story, we focus on Moses and the Israelites and how they escaped slavery in Egypt. This is an inspiring story of freedom and justice for many people, not just Jewish people. African-American slaves, for example, sang songs like the one we just sang about the Jews getting their freedom from slavery to keep alive the hope that they too would escape in their time. But for now, I'm going to focus more on the king, the Pharaoh, who did not want to let the Jewish people go. The person in the story who had the power, who was holding the Jewish people as slaves, making them work and refusing them their freedom. As the story goes on in the Bible, each time there is a plague and Moses comes back to Pharaoh to ask again, and this happens all 10 times for all 10 plagues, the Pharaoh is said to harden his heart and refuse. Even when the 8th plague hits and its locusts covering every inch of the land and eating every leaf of every plant, and Pharaoh's officials even try to talk him into letting the Jewish people go, the Pharaoh's heart is hardened and he says no. It's not until the very last plague that the Pharaoh gives in, except it's really less of a giving in and more of a throwing the Jewish people out. He has had it. And he wants those people who he thinks caused the plagues gone. Part of me can't understand this hardness of heart and wants to condemn it. How can anyone be so awful, holding all of those people in bondage, making them do all of the hard and dirty work in the city, and treating them so badly on top of it? How can it be possible to distance oneself so completely from a group of people that they can be considered as less than us? Because that's what has to happen to be able to turn people into slaves. And part of me can resonate with it. There's some backstory in the Bible about how the Egyptians were afraid of the Jewish people and thought they would take over Egypt because there were so many of them, and because their population was growing. Once we're afraid of a group of people, it's just a small step to turn them into others. It's a distancing of emotion, a separation, right, of us versus them that can harden our hearts to them and their plight. And from there, it's a small step to rationalizing that we deserve the good things in life, even if it's at their expense. It's like the Cherokee story of the two wolves that live in each of our hearts. One of the wolves represents the anger and the greed and the jealousy and the arrogance, and the resentment, the superiority that we all feel at times. The other wolf represents the joy and the peace and the love, the generosity, the compassion that we all also feel at times. The wolves battle within us constantly, and it is said that the one who wins is the one that we feed. We feed those wolves through our decisions. We can choose to close ourselves off from others, to harden our hearts, to make it easier for the greed superiority wolf to win. Or we can choose to open ourselves to the possibilities that arise when we look at others to see who they truly are, and not how they will impact who we are. This feeds the love-compassion wolf. This is true of our interactions with all people, whether or not we actually know them. And it's true of our relationship with our earth home. It was the hardening of hearts in decades past that made it possible to deny that climate change was actually happening. It is the hardening of hearts that makes it possible to ignore the plight of people living in frontline communities, like the people being displaced from Kivalina, the barrier island in Alaska that is disappearing into the rising sea, or the people learning how to live in drought conditions in California, or the people who are still displaced after Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana and Mississippi, and Superstorm Sandy in New York and New Jersey, or the people living in the shadow of toxic oil plants right next door in Indiana. It's the hardening of hearts that makes it possible not to think about the loss of habitat for polar bears that need thick ice to live. Because there's something in it for me, this hardening of heart, this ignoring, if I can continue to not see these consequences, I can continue to live comfortably without changing my habits, my consumption, my footprint on the earth. If I can say no, 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 when I'm faced with reality that my choices can cause harm to others, I can do anything I want. This feeds the greed superiority wolf, and I feel like I win. But do I? Do you know that saying about how it's better to be kind than it is to be right? Then why is it that it feels so good to be right? Even when it gets in the way of staying in relationship. Parker Palmer writes of this poem that Barb just read for us, it leads me to ask what I think is a question worth pondering. How might things change if we began our political conversations not from our certainties, but from our doubts and loves? Many of us who differ politically love the same things, he writes, our children and grandchildren, our country, the natural world. Many of us who differ politically harbor the same doubts that what is being done or not done to care for the things we love is the best or the right thing to do. Yes, we differ on what ought to be done, but what if instead of starting by arguing over solutions, over the place where we are right, we began by sharing our loves and doubts? I suspect that our political conversations would be much more productive because they would proceed from common ground. Hey, it's worth a try. One thing I'm certain about is that the other way isn't working. It's no surprise to hear that I agree with Parker Palmer. I think the loves and the doubts that I hold are probably pretty similar to the loves and doubts held by those folks that I call other, like those folks supporting that political candidate who's using a platform of fear and hate. I think those people love their freedom just like I do. And I think they doubt that they'll be taken care of in the future, just like I do. And I suspect the loves and the doubts I hold are also pretty similar to the loves and doubts of folks who think they need to buy all the latest stuff. I think those people might be afraid that they might not have enough, just like I sometimes am. It may also be that I have loves and doubts in common with people who don't compost or recycle. Or with people who enjoy or maybe even abuse the power that comes with their uniform or their badge, or with people who live in poverty in a different part of this city. The trouble is that it's so much easier to harden my heart in self-defense from those people than to engage them in conversation. But as Parker Palmer says, that's not working. We talked last week about awakening, about how it's a growing awareness of something that feels big and important. This is an awakening, too. This exploration of keeping our hearts open and engaged with people and issues that are painful and hard and so not like ours. This growing understanding that all people are our cousins, that they have hopes and dreams, that they have doubts and loves, just like each of us do, and that some of them suffer. That's the what. The so what is what each of us thinks of this. Unitarian Universalism teaches about the inherent worth and dignity of all, and about the interconnected web that holds us all. I see these two principles as being in relationship with each other. If we are to honor all that we are connected to, then the inherent worth and dignity of everyone else is just as important as mine. The now what part, That's up to each of us. And so on this week, when Passover and Earth Day intersect, I invite us to think about what the things to which our hearts might have hardened are, and how we might open them. Because saying no, no, no only cuts us off from the resources we need to gather our strength and our courage together and figure out what we're going to do to make sure that this one promised land of ours is enough. May it be so, and may we be so.